Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The word in Washington today is panic. Washington super lobbyist Jack Abramoff, the big money, K Street darling of the Capitol's Bush GOP era, has pleaded guilty essentially to corrupting Congress. He's cut a deal with the feds. He's ready to sing. The GOP stalwart who loved to entertain D.C. insiders with his imitation of the Godfather's Michael Corleone will now entertain prosecutors and courtrooms with point-by-point descriptions of how he bought Capitol Hill. The one-time chairman of the country's College Republicans will now take the country to school on exactly how lobbying becomes straight-up bribery. Up next on Point, the Abramoff plea and the fallout ahead in Washington. Joining me from Washington is Ann Kornblut. She is Washington correspondent for the New York Times and was at Abramoff's plea hearing yesterday. Ann, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
A famously brash man who cut a wide swath through Washington in the last decade. Paint the picture in the courtroom yesterday, Ann. What was Abramoff's demeanor?
Well, first of all, of course, it was packed. You don't see that often like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
He was very contrite. He was wearing a double-breasted suit. He sort of looked down almost the entire time and spoke in a surprisingly soft voice. He added a few things when the judge was asking him if he understood the pleas, and you could barely hear a word he said. Everyone was straining to watch him. So it was really a sort of stunning reversal. Now, we haven't seen him in quite some time. He's been underground for at least a year. So it was really a first glimpse at him since he failed to testify before the Senate. He came in and took the Fifth. So everyone was really looking to see what they could from him, and he certainly looked contrite.
He's been underground for about a year, but we understand he's been talking for a long time already to the feds in cutting this deal. What is the deal that he appears to have cut?
No, you're exactly right. He's been talking for about 18 months. There are two cases here, one in Florida and one in Washington. In Washington, he pleaded guilty to three criminal counts. As you said, conspiracy, fraud, tax evasion. In Florida, he's going to plead to two counts. The deal really, though, is that he's going to cooperate in this big public corruption investigation in exchange for probably a reduced sentence. No one's bound by the agreement, but in all likelihood, he will see no more than 11 years in prison.
11 out of what could have been, we're told, maybe 30.
I would bet that he will see less than 11 at this point.
And put this in context for us. Congress has seen big scandals over the years. Abscam, the savings and loans scandal. How does this one appear to be shaping up?
Well, it's very unclear. The short answer is it looks huge. But there's a very high bar here. The prosecutors are trying to prove that in some instances campaign donations were effectively bribes. That's not been done before, and it's actually the way Washington operates. So on the one hand, it could affect just about everyone in town and the way that they've been functioning to get reelected. On the other hand, the legal bar could be so high that they may not reach it. Obviously, Tom DeLay's name has been tossed around quite a bit in this case. It's unclear, talking to everyone involved, whether he really will go down, so to speak. Again, because the legal bar is so high. What is clear for now is that the political ramifications, putting aside the legal ones, could be absolutely huge. We're in an election year. It's 2006. The midterms are coming up. President Bush's own numbers are quite low at the moment. So what this could mean for the reelection in Congress is unclear, but could have huge implications for
The legal bar is very high, as you say, Ann, but Jack Abramoff was famous for how explicit he was, verbally and in emails, in the deals that he went for. Is that what might give the prosecutors confidence here to go after a lot of congressmen, the explicitness of the quid pro quo?
Well, there's that. I mean, sure, there's this incredible trail of emails. In order to prove bribery, however, you have to prove that both sides agreed that it was a quid pro quo. So certainly at this point, Abramoff is cooperating to the extent that he believes he participated in a bribe. He will testify to that. How credible a witness he is, how much supporting evidence there is, it's still unclear. We've only seen, you have to bear in mind with this, that we are seeing the smallest sliver of what's actually going on here, and it's a great frustration and enticement as a reporter, but we don't know what the Justice Department has, and what they have is probably 90% more than what we've seen.
And how is this likely to unfold? Are we going to see Jack Abramoff in the dock testifying for month after month against congressperson after congressperson and staffers and others?
Oh, it's almost, it's almost impossible to imagine at this point. I think what we're going to see for quite some time is silence as he, well, here I am predicting I'm going to be proven wrong tomorrow, but I think they are still building the case. There are many mid-level aides or senior-level aides whose names you've never heard of, but who are now in their sights, people who used to work for Tom DeLay and other members of Congress. I think we're going to see that next level targeted, how they got their jobs on K Street, that kind of thing. And then it may be some time before members are implicated. But again, like everything in this case, it's just impossible to predict.
More, please, today in Miami from Jack Abramoff. He will be in custody now, or is he a walking around man?
He's free to go. He was free to go. He was previously indicted in this Miami case, and he's out on bond. He's remains out on bond. And I believe they said yesterday in court that his passport had been relinquished. So he's out wandering around. I mean, the main point here is that he's cooperating. So anything he does to jeopardize his cooperation with the government would put his plea deal in jeopardy. So I wouldn't expect him to run anywhere.
And the tremors in Washington today, Anne, can you feel it?
Well, they aren't here, of course. It's only January 4th, so Congress isn't back yet.
Mm-hmm.
But absolutely, we even had a comment out of the White House yesterday condemning what he pleaded to, and for the most part, the White House has refrained from talking about this case. So, absolutely. I mean, like I said, it's an election year. This is not good for the Republican leadership, which has already had its own problems, obviously, with Tom DeLay. What will be interesting is to see how the Democrats handle it, frankly.
And the Abramoff web reaching out in many, many directions. Anne Kornblit with the New York Times in Washington, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Joining us now, also from Washington, is Karen Tumulty. She's national political correspondent for Time magazine. Karen, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
So here it is. You predicted it with us on the air not long ago, the Attorney General's office perhaps drawing a new line in the sand here. What's lobbying and what's bribery? Do you see a line being drawn?
Absolutely. And, the question is the Justice Department being more aggressive, more expansive than we've ever seen them being willing to be in the past, or do they just have better evidence? And as you yourself mentioned, what we know of Jack Abramoff's work habits here, this is in many ways the first scandal of the post-BlackBerry era. This man was an obsessive emailer. He required his staff every single day to turn in something called the Daily Wrap. Mm. And that was to include every favor they requested, every payment they made, every favor that was requested of them. All these records are now in the hands of federal investigators. And this appears to be how they are going to make their case and possibly to take the law into areas where it never has been before.
Karen, remind us of the structure of this. You had Jack Abramoff taking in millions and millions, largely from Indian tribes and casino owners, and it appears recycling that all over Washington, into Congress in particular.
And there was an enormously important story, I think, that was written by the Washington Post over the weekend on New Year's Eve, which, of course, is not exactly a moment when people are paying attention to this stuff. But it suggested, too, that Jack Abramoff turned a fire hose of money onto the political operation of then House Majority Leader Tom DeLay.
Mm.
That this included not only Indian tribe money, but Russian oil interest money.
Mm-hmm.
And that rather than making these donations directly into, say, campaign funds or political action committees, where this money went was to a public policy group that was set up and, you know, judging from what the Post story seemed to imply, acting as a front for DeLay's political operation. Now, if this is true and if these implications, you know, turn out to be justified, this could be enormously consequential for Tom DeLay.
And, of course, his longtime business partner, Michael Scanlon, the former press secretary for Tom DeLay. I mean, the network is very tightly bound here.
That's right. And, you know, I believe that with, you know, again, because there's so many emails, so much evidence here that, you know, things that in Washington that have gone on for decades by winks and nods and verbal agreements, now the investigators have actual hard evidence.
Evidence, and we understand potentially big numbers, whether it's half a dozen in the gun sites here or a dozen or 20. I mean, there are very big numbers out there. So is justice changing or asking that the way politics are done be changed?
Well, that is a very good question, and we're going to see this play out as well. I mean, perhaps, and, you know, if Congress is smart, they're going to draw up some new lobbying regulations. But as we've seen in the past, you know, whenever Congress writes new rules for itself, it very quickly finds ways around the new rules it's written for itself. And there are limits, for instance, on what members of Congress are supposed to be allowed to accept from lobbyists, and those are just routinely forgotten. And, you know, only when a scandal like this is a recent memory do people sort of make sure that every T is crossed and every I is dotted.
We've heard, on the one hand, people say, look, you can't criminalize politics. This is the way the wheels of a democracy turn, and if you criminalize it, things grind to a halt. On the other hand, I'm reading Mickey Edwards here, a former congressman, Republican from Oklahoma, saying this is at a scale that is really shocking. They were so supremely confident that there didn't seem to be any kind of moral compass here. So did the problem reach a new scale? Did it reach a new level? Or is this just old tricks?
Well, there is another element to this. I mean, yes, the lobbyists have always been, if not in the room, very close to the room. That's why they call them lobbyists. But this Republican leadership, particularly in the House, through something that Tom DeLay devised called the K Street Project, had a much closer working relationship with the lobbying community, I think, than any congressional leadership that we had seen in the past. They not only relied on their money to fund their campaigns, but they also relied on these lobbyists to come in and really help them push their agenda. And I think that this is also now what is coming back to, and, you know, by the way, they did this unapologetically, proudly even. It was very much a part of their strategy, and now this is what is coming back to bite them.
And so does that mean the possibility of control in the House changing hands? Is the Senate involved in this at all? I mean, does this really change the calculus, or is this a big flurry and on with the show?
Well, I can tell you that a lot of Republicans are afraid, very afraid, that this changes the calculus, and that is one of the reasons that you are now very likely to see a major overhaul in the House leadership, a special election not only to replace Tom DeLay, but to sweep out possibly other members of the House Republican leadership, because a lot of these members, if just for purposes of self-protection, think that they need somebody else as the face of their party. This is, if nothing else, the greatest irony of all of this. When the Republicans came to power in 1994, one of the main reasons, one of their strongest arguments, was that the Democrats, after 40 years of running the House, had become corrupt with scandal after scandal after scandal. Here they've been in power only 11 years, and we see the biggest scandal possibly that we've ever seen in Washington. So, you know, Republicans will point you to polls that suggest that people do not think that the Democrats are any more moral than the Republicans. But the fact is, when something like this happens in politics, the guys who are running the place tend to be the guys who pay the price.
Karen Tumulty, always great talking with you. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for Time magazine, and joined right now from Washington by Larry Noble. He's executive director of the Center for Responsive Politics. He was general counsel of the Federal Elections Commission for 13 years through the year 2000. Larry Noble, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So, Larry, what's your sense? Watershed here? If Jack Abramoff sings for a year, if we see congressmen going down in flames, congressmen going to jail?
I think the first instinct in Washington when this type of thing happens is to hunker down and hope it passes, hope the storm passes. But if we do see members of Congress indicted, we see others lose their jobs because of the scandal, then I think we will see some fundamental changes. But political contributions are still going to flow and there's still going to be lobbying. The question is the culture that now exists, which allowed gifts to be given, travel to be taken, allowed really close relationships between lobbyists and members of Congress, is that going to change? And I think it's possible.
Justice seems to be saying that the line has been crossed here. I mean, it's not illegal to lobby, but lay this out for us. It is illegal to say, here's my money and here's the vote I want, and will you promise to give it to me? Yes, I will. That is over the line, I guess.
That's right. There's a very fine line between political contributions and bribery, but it's that fine line that keeps you out of jail. You can give a political contribution because a member has supported you. You can give a political contribution and discuss legislation that you would like to see passed or something you'd like to see entered into the congressional record. What you can't do is have an explicit, and as the Justice Department is now saying, implicit understanding that that contribution or that gift is for that that public act, that putting something in the congressional record, that vote. And that's really what they have to prove. They have to prove that there's a quid pro quo. And it is a tough standard. But we're going to have to see what Abramoff has. As your other guests have said, Jack Abramoff is notorious for writing emails, for bragging about what he did. And I'm sure the Justice Department now has all those emails. And all that's going to be laid out. And there are a lot of members of Congress right now, I think, who are talking to their lawyers and who are very nervous.
A very flamboyant figure and unapologetic. I mean, he bragged about the way he had Congress on a string.
Right. I think what's interesting about the last 10 years or so is that we saw a culture develop where they came to accept these extravagant things, this type of lobbying, where Jack Abramoff could brag about what he was doing, where you could have the K Street Project, which was basically based on the proposition that Republicans wanted lobbyists to give to Republicans. They wanted them to stop giving to Democrats. They wanted trade associations and lobbying firms in Washington to hire Republicans, not hire Democrats. Mm. And as these things went on, as these trips to Scotland went on, as these gifts were given, and nothing was done about it, I think some members just got the feeling it was the Wild West and there were no holds barred. And one of the things that has not been talked about much is what gave rise to this culture? In part is the fact that you had a House Ethics Committee or have a House Ethics Committee and a Senate Ethics Committee that are dormant, that they don't do anything. You basically have a culture in Washington that the laws were not being enforced. And when you have that culture, some people are going to take advantage of it. We have to be clear. This doesn't involve every member of Congress. It's really a group of members now who are under investigation.
A group as large as 60, we just heard a number thrown out here.
Right. And we're hearing a bunch of different numbers. Now, we're hearing on the low side 6, maybe 12 if you add staffers, up to 20, up to 60. We don't know how far the Justice Department is going to go. And I think what you're going to see is, in a sense, three different categories. There are going to be members who are going to be indicted, and they're going to have very serious trouble. Then there are going to be members that are going to be implicated and probably will not be indicted. But there's going to be talk about gifts they received, about their close relationship with Abramoff. And then the third tier are the members, and there are a lot of these, well over 200, who received money from Abramoff clients, the Indian tribes, from Sun Cruise casinos, from Abramoff, for some of his associates. And they may not have done anything else. And those are the ones who will also have some political fallout, but may very well survive this.
Trying to offload that money lickety-split right now, including President Bush's reelection committee, saying they're going to give all those thousands they got from Abramoff to the American Heart Association. Do we have a sick system? Voters look on and wonder if the democracy is working, if money has been able to play this large a role for this many years, now we're going to see it all laid out again. Is there something wrong with the way the Democratic game is being played here?
Well, I think a lot of the voters do think there's something wrong. There's a new CNN poll that says about half the public thinks that members of Congress are corrupt. And that is really discouraging because these are the people who are elected to serve us. And what you have is a money culture in Congress. Right now, the Federal Election Commission, the agency I was from, is under siege because the president is about to replace one of the only really enforcement-oriented commissioners left. And he's going to put people on the commission who don't believe in enforcing the law. And all these things go on in Washington, and I think it adds to the culture that exists on Capitol Hill that really we can get away with what we want. At the end of the day, the thing that will have the most effect is if the voters react.
You're talking there about the Ethics Committee, talking about the Election Commission. What about policy from 10 years, or you put the year figure on it, of this kind of interaction? Do we see national policy shaped in a way that is twisted away from what it might have been if money didn't, you know, walk so proud?
I don't think there's any doubt about that. What we've seen is that those who make the contributions, the industries who make the contributions, often get what they want on Capitol Hill. On our website, opensecrets.org, you can track issues. And what we do is we show you the issues and who's giving and what they get for it.
So like what?
Well, look at the energy industry. From day one with this administration, the energy industry, which has been a big supporter of the administration, has gotten pretty much the energy policy they want. The financial industry is a very big giver, and they get pretty much what they want. Because the reality is Washington runs off of money, runs off of political contributions. And so what you see is a system that is very much biased towards those who can collect the contributions, those who can give the contributions. Now, it doesn't carry the day all the time, but it clearly influences the policy we get. And in that way, it affects every member of the public. They may be pushed to do something. Right now, there are several pieces of legislation about lobbying that have been introduced from Congressman Meehan, Senator Feingold, George Miller, even Bob Ney, who is the target of a lot of this investigation, has introduced a directive. And some of them are better than others or stronger than others. But there are bills on the table to try to clean up this system or at least get more disclosure and actually stop some of the practices. Do those bills just sit there and languish, or does something happen with them? And a lot of that depends on the public and what happens. And if there is a real outpouring this November, and if members of Congress feel the heat because of what they did, if members lose their seats and members go to jail, then you will see a change in the culture for a while. These things are cyclical. It'll come back again. But at least for a while, you will see some changes.
Larry Noble, you laid out very well. We're grateful to you for being with us. Larry Noble,
my pleasure.
Executive Director of the Center for Responsive Politics. Thank you very much for being with us.